Ladies and gentlemen, start your engines. It's time to get revved up for sports, sports, and guess what? More sports on the RPM Roundtable Podcast with Robin Clark, Paul McGaughy, and Mike Sesney.
Welcome to the RPM Roundtable Podcast. It's Thursday, April 4th. My name is Paul. I'm here along with Robin and Mike. As usual, we're in the studios at Centennial College in Toronto. We're going to start off by looking at the trade deadline that just passed in the NHL. A couple deals stood out in my mind, one of them being Jason Pominville, the captain of the Buffalo Sabres, being traded to the Minnesota Wild. Is that correct?
That's correct, yep.
And, I mean, there's so many deals that you can look at. I think in total I read there were 17 trades involving 23 teams and a total of 30 players. That wouldn't include draft picks, I don't imagine, so that would bump up the number as far as total, you know, hockey players. Anyway, let's just jump right into it, guys. What were some of the trades that stood out for you?
Definitely that one you mentioned with Pominville going to Minnesota. I think the return that Buffalo got was pretty big. The first rounder this year and the second rounder next year, along with another goaltender to kind of add to their stable in Matt Hackett. And I think a forward prospect, Johan Larson. And also Minnesota got that fourth round pick from Buffalo too. But I just think in terms of a return, Buffalo, I think, maximized what they could get from Minnesota. That's pretty much as good of a haul as you can get for a guy like Pominville. So they definitely did a good job. Kudos to them. I don't think their general manager is going to be around to do anything with those picks. But I think, like we said a few podcasts ago, we kind of see him maybe on the chopping block this offseason. So, but definitely good pickup for Buffalo there.
No. Yeah, I totally agree with that. I mean, that's a lot to get for one player. I think Pominville still has a lot left in terms of Minnesota. I think that they have their sights set on winning that division. I still don't agree with the overhaul going on in Buffalo. I don't think they're as bad as they've shown this year. I know that seems kind of hard to believe because they've struggled all year. They brought in a new coach and they haven't improved, but I put them, I don't think they're as good as the Flyers, but I think it would have been a mistake for the Flyers to blow it up yesterday, and I'm not convinced that Buffalo's making the right decision, although I will be interested to see, as Mike was saying, what they do with Matt Hackett, who's played a few NHL games and is basically almost NHL ready. I think Ryan Miller is probably on the way out.
Another trade that stood out for me was the Tampa Bay Lightning giving up on rookie Corey Conacher and sending him to the Ottawa Senators. What do you guys read into that trade?
Actually, for me, I saw that, and I know people were kind of shocked that Ottawa was able to grab Conacher, but I think that was a sell-high move by Tampa Bay. I don't think Conacher's going to be as good of a player as he's been so far consistently. I think it's just kind of a flash in the pan thing for him. I mean, he's a pretty small guy, and he's had a tremendous season. It's been kind of a pretty good ongoing story, but I think it's a sell-high move for them, and they were able to pull out a goaltender out of the deal. So,
and another trade, and Robin, I know you might be touching on this a bit more later. The Columbus Blue Jackets were the most active team yesterday. One of the deals they made was to acquire Marian Gaborik from the New York Rangers to bolster their offense.
Yeah, this trade really surprised me for a number of reasons. First of all, I know Gaborik is having a down year and was in John Tortorella's doghouse playing on the fourth line, etc., but I don't think that the return that the Rangers got was good enough. They basically got, just to recap for anyone who doesn't know, they got Derek Brassard, John Moore, and Derek Dorsett. And just starting off, Dorsett is a grinder. He's injured, out for the season, and is a UFA. So that was just, he was thrown in for salary reasons. And then you've got Derek Brassard, who everyone considers a prospect, but is now 25 years old, has a career high of 47 points and had 18 points in 34 games this year. And frankly, I'm going to say that he's been a first-round bust. And John Moore, young shutdown defenseman, first-round pick in 2009, but you don't trade a 40-goal scorer for a shutdown defenseman and a 25-year-old who might make it. So I hate the trade for the Rangers.
Mike, there's one other deal that I'd like to get your opinion on. This actually happened a couple days before the deadline when Boston picked up Jaeger from the Dallas Stars. I guess they were obviously looking to add some scoring. They weren't able to get a Ginla, and then they go and get Jaeger. Is that move going to work out well for them?
I think so. I mean, he's still got a bit left in the tank, obviously, and he's been in playoff situations many a times. And obviously Boston's gearing up for another run. I don't know. It's could go, I guess, either way, I think. He's good, but, I mean, he's getting up there in age, too. And I know he was able to recapture that magic last year in Philly and even this year in Dallas, so I don't really see him having too much of a problem getting accustomed to playing there in Boston. And obviously he's probably thrilled they're going to the playoffs, so why not? The other thing I just wanted to add is I think the Rangers, when they picked up Ryan Clough, that kind of initiated that move of getting Gabrick out of New York. I know he was in Tortorella's doghouse, like Robin said, but I think just picking up Clough, and if they want to re-sign him, then getting Gabrick's salary off the books was a move they needed to make. So obviously I think those were kind of connected, but good for Columbus. I mean, they picked up the scoring winger they needed, and that's pretty much what they addressed their needs at the deadline, I guess, and we'll see where that takes them, whether or not they can get past the first round in the playoffs. Is yet to be seen.
Well, they're still on the outside looking in, but I heard their GM go on the record after the trade of saying that they have every intention of trying to re-sign Gabrick. I know he's under contract for one more year next season, but like I said, I don't think the Rangers got nearly enough back.
Now, Robin, you just scribbled a note to me that said Leafs trade. I actually have no idea what you're talking about. Did the Leafs do something that I missed?
Yeah. They traded for Colorado defenseman Ryan O'Byrne, and they traded a fourth-round pick for him, which in some circles may be considered an overpayment, I guess, considering I believe they got James Reimer in the fourth round and also Matt Fratton. So, but, I mean, it's still a draft pick. You don't know what they're going to be. But to me, I know Robin wasn't a fan of the move. I like the move. I know O'Byrne played with Lyles in Colorado. They were on a D pair, and he's that big shutdown D guy. I'm not going to say they need, because they had holes there, but I think he's brings that veteran experience, and obviously he was in the playoffs with Montreal. I think he's played 15 playoff games. He's like a shot blocker, fighter, and he's a Randy Carlyle type guy, so I think he'll fit in. And to me, I guess that spells the Koska experiment, and Gardner stays riding the pine up in the press box for now, unless they bring him in and Lyles sits in the press box, but that's yet to be seen, I guess.
Okay, let's conclude this segment by talking about Roberto Luongo. Obviously was not moved from Vancouver. His comment basically was that his contract sucks and it's very difficult to move. And I think he basically said that if he could rip up his contract, he would. So that sounds like a guy that would like to be playing somewhere else.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. That's one of the most honest things I've ever heard an athlete say. It was a fascinating press conference to watch. And someone also pointed out that in football, I believe, you are allowed to renegotiate your contract and, you know, rip it up, sign something else to move on for more playing time or whatever the circumstances may be. And that would be an interesting thing to do in the NHL, because there's no question that Roberto Luongo would be the starting goaltender on, I don't know, half the teams in the NHL. So
yeah, I just thought it was funny. that he said that his contract is crap. I think if I was making $64 million, the last thing I would ever say is my contract sucks. So, yeah, but I guess he has the right to say what he wants, and good for Luongo. I thought he kind of put himself out there yesterday and was brutally honest with everything, and that's all he can do. Obviously, he's going to want out of there in the summertime. Whether or not they facilitate that, I don't know. And I'm not going to even bother talking about the Martin Erat trade to Washington because, quote-unquote, he is undistinguished. So you heard that from a source, unnamed source.
When we return on the RPM Roundtable podcast, we're going to have a special guest, and we're going to be talking about WrestleMania 29.
Oh, you didn't know? Your ass better call somebody!
The RPM Roundtable is pleased to welcome special guest Chris Barat. Chris, say hi to everyone.
Hey, hello out there, RPM fans.
Now, if you recognize that voice, Chris actually does the intro to our show and the exit, which is fantastic. We really like that. Chris is one of our classmates, and he is here to basically enlighten us about WrestleMania 29, and Mike is going to take part in that conversation, too. He's a bit of a wrestling fan. WrestleMania 29 is set to take place this Sunday, April 7th, in East Rutherford, New Jersey, at the MetLife Stadium. Chris, have at it, man. Tell us, what are the storylines? What are the key matchups? What are you looking for at WrestleMania 29?
Well, I'm looking for a lot better than what the lineup shows. I mean, to me, this is going to be one of the weakest WrestleManias, in my opinion. Bringing back, you know, some retired superstars to be on the headliner card instead of showcasing your young talent, I don't think it's going to be as good as a show as everyone thinks it's going to be, honestly. We're looking at some of the matchups today. We got, for the 7th, I mean, we got tons of Funk and the Funkadelics versus the Team Rhodes, Scholar, and Bella Twins. Like, ooh, like, you know, there's going to be a lot of dancing and a lot of just fluff. I think that is the pre-show. But then you got Chris Jericho versus Fandango, as he likes to call himself. I mean, I love Chris Jericho. I think he's a great wrestler, but I don't know if that's the right match for him, honestly, against the up-and-comer Fandango. That means that Fandango's probably going to win the match, you know, just to kind of give himself that hype going in, because he hasn't had a match in Raw as yet. It's just, you know, a couple of appearances, a couple of dancing and all that. And then you got the WWE Tag Team Champions, which, again, the Tag Team Champion division is kind of weak, really and truly. But, hey, they're holding it together, Team Hell No versus Dolph Ziggler and Big E Langston. And I think that's going to be an interesting match with the dynamics there. But, again, it's a weak division, so you don't really take too much stock.
Just tell me, Team Hell No, that's kind of a funny name to begin with. Who is on that team?
Oh, that's Kane. And what's this guy's name?
Daniel Bryan.
Thank you. Daniel Bryan. See, that's how weak.
they were put together through a course of anger management segments.
Exactly.
They went through therapy together, and then they became a team at the end to kind of pass their final anger management test.
And he changed.
And they won the title. So yeah. I think it was about a year ago now, almost.
Yeah, and they changed his catchphrase from yes to no, yeah. No. Yeah. So, I mean, that's his moniker and stuff like that.
Yeah, that match, I thought, it's kind of funny. I thought maybe Team Rhodes Scholars versus Team Hell No would have made more sense. I also hate the fact that they put team in front of the names of the tag teams. I think that's absolutely ridiculous.
It's because they have so few teams left.
Exactly.
I mean,
they just throw guys together now. And I think Ziggler actually should be in a more high-profile match. I saw maybe, I still see him maybe after the Swagger and Del Rio match for the World Heavyweight Championship, which, by the way, I think is probably the best booked match on the card because they spent the time to actually build a storyline for it. And I could see Ziggler cashing in the Money in the Bank. Obviously, that's the last day of the year he can cash in his Money in the Bank briefcase. If you don't know what that is, essentially he won a ladder match that gives him the ability to cash in a contract to face anybody or anyone who is the champion at any time. At any point of the year, even if the guy's like beat up after a match, he can come in, just cash the briefcase. 1, 2, 3, he wins the title. Uh-huh.
And it makes more sense as a storyline. I mean, like, he's been having it for so long now, the anticipation is there. So for him to interject into that match, it would make more sense. I mean, Dolph Ziggler, you're right, should be in a much higher place right now, maybe with triple threat match with Del Rio. But that's, I don't know what WWE is doing right now, but
yeah, they're misusing him too. That's what they do. And Jericho Fandango, I agree with you completely. I think Fandango is going to go over in that match because Jericho is obviously just coming back for a tour of duty, so to speak, where he's just going to come in and put over young stars to make their names bigger. And I think I read as well that Vince is kind of on this Fandango mission right now, where he's trying to push him as a star, but as we know, those usually don't work out because he forces it onto people.
Yep. I mean, that's how Funkadelic came in. Yeah. Like, they're pushing him, and then what is he now? He just dances when he matches.
Yeah, he's just a gimmick now too.
Exactly. The matches I'm interested in seeing is Ryback versus Mark Henry, which I think they've been hyping that up a little bit too, and I think that's going to be a really good match because I think both are really good competitors. And also the Randy Orton, Sheamus, and Big Show versus The Shield. They've been bigging up Shield for a while now. I just like the story a little bit. They could do a lot more. There's the potential to do a lot more with The Shield, maybe adding a fourth guy, fifth guy, whatever not, making it like the next NWO, so to speak. So I like the way they're going there. I'm looking forward to seeing that match.
Yeah, me too. Actually, you're just speaking of The Shield, I agree. I think they also could have been pushed a little differently, just in the sense that there's not enough of them coming out and kind of attacking people, like blindside. Like, I know they've been doing a bit of the segments where they beat people up backstage, but just this team of Orton, Sheamus, and Big Show is so randomly thrown together. Again, like everything they do leading up to WrestleMania, I think they go up and down their roster and honestly just go, oh, what's this guy doing? Nothing? Okay, let's put him in a friggin' tag team match.
Like, yeah.
They don't build proper storylines anymore. I think actually just when we were speaking to Jimmy Hart down in Florida, he was saying that the writers aren't actually wrestling fans, so they don't even know what has ever happened before. They don't know how to build storylines. So I think that's just a part of that, and I don't know if it's the pressure on these people, but they can't build proper storylines ever, in my mind.
That is true. Gone are the days of New World Order, Degeneration X, Heart Foundation when they had the Canadian group. I mean, those are real.
Yeah.
You really look forward to each and every Raw for anticipation what's going to happen next, because they're always through a surprise. And S.H.I.E.L.D. has been the closest, so to speak, to like surprises.
Yeah.
But you're right. They should be like, I mean, the difference is with those teams, they would challenge for like tag teams or intercontinental championships and stuff like that. S.H.I.E.L.D. hasn't challenged for anything like that
yet. Yeah, they never have matches on Raw either, which is kind of strange.
And now, if I could just jump in for a second, does The Rock have a role in this WrestleMania at all? Is he still in wrestling?
Yeah, we haven't gotten there yet. Okay.
We're getting there.
Okay, so I jumped the gun a little bit there. But
We could go right there, actually, because that is going to... Rock versus Cena 2? No. Yeah. They should have been Rock, Cena, CM Punk triple threat match.
Yeah.
That's what it should have been. Not this dumb storyline with, oh, it's redemption time, blah, blah, blah. I can't pick which side I'm on. Am I a good guy, a bad guy? Oh, you suck. You know, type of thing. Like, And Rock, even though he's come back, he has not had one match on Raw. Not one. Usually, you know, the WWE champion has at least one match leading up to it, you know, something like that. But all they do is just talk back and forth, blab and all that stuff.
Yeah, it's getting pretty stale. And adding CM Punk to that match would have added more of an element of surprise, because now we all know John Cena is going to win the match. The Rock's going to go back to doing movies. I mean, it's pretty obvious. The only other scenario I see happening is if The Rock wins at WrestleMania, then next night on Raw, he loses to John Cena.
That's true. Or this could be the ultimate push to turn Cena bad for good, because they've been trying that. That's why, remember when Kane was attacking Cena? We all thought, okay, this is it. Cena's going to go turn heel, and that's going to be the end of it. But that didn't really happen. So maybe, just maybe, this is the push to turn him heel. I don't know what's going to do for ratings and whatnot, but...
Yeah, I don't know. I can't see it benefiting them at all, but it's kind of silly that they built this guy up to be so one-dimensional that he can't even go bad, or they have one guy that's so big that if they turn him heel, they'll lose ratings because the kids will all go away.
You know,
do you think it's maybe time for wrestling to go away from the pay-per-view format for WrestleMania?
Maybe less pay-per-views, because it seems like every, like, used to be every maybe 3 months a pay-per-view, but they seem to have one every month. Everything, they just keep going and going and going. So I think if they had reduced the amount of pay-per-views and just build more on the Raw storylines, like and SmackDown, and really create some good, strong storylines that people can be entertained and enjoy, I think that's what they should do. But
I agree, and I think as opposed to building a four-week story to one pay-per-view, ending it, not continuing it to the next one, because I think they're guilty of doing that. I've never for a while now, I haven't seen a storyline actually carry on over the span of a few months, except for these big high-profile ones like The Rock and John Cena. But it gets stale after a while when all they do is talk on the mic every time they come out. They never fight. They have, you know, minor altercations, whatever. And actually, we haven't even talked about the other two headlining matches here. Is The Undertaker versus CM Punk, which, again, and it's like the same thing. The streak now is, what, 20-0?
Yeah, 20-0. And, I mean, we all know that they're not going to let Undertaker come back to lose against CM Punk. No, yeah. That's not going to happen.
And the thing is, if CM Punk loses, I feel like he's going to lose all that momentum he built as a big top name. If he loses to Taker, he's going to lose that kind of credibility as being a top guy. But they're not going to end Taker's streak, I don't think.
No, they can't do that. I mean, it's one match a year.
Yeah.
they just can't let him do that.
And that's become a gimmick in itself, and it's getting tired and old. And mm-hmm.
You would think after, Triple H fought him, that's it. End of era, done. But obviously, the card is so weak that they had to bring it back for one more time.
How many end of eras can you have?
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be, you know, 2030, and we're still going to have The Undertaker coming out there in a wheelchair.
Exactly.
And beating guys 30-0.
Kane, can you fight me one more time?
Yeah, exactly.
Please. Oh, and let's not forget another retiree, Triple H versus Brock Lesnar. Okay. These guys wrestle what? Once a year, and now they're coming back again for round two. They're going to say that's the end of Triple H's career if he loses, but the man hasn't wrestled in what, how long?
Yeah.
So come on, another weak storyline again. I mean, I would like to see Brock Lesnar a little bit more. Maybe he should fight The Undertaker, or maybe he should fight Ryback, or something like that, but come on, Triple H.
Well, I think they gave Lesnar like $2 million over the next couple years, so in terms of using him, they're not really using his worth right now. I don't think he's as big of a household name as he used to be. So I think they have invested so much money in him, and they're using him once a year. And I thought the match could have been a Hell in a Cell even.
Yeah.
Hey. I don't like the Triple H must retire is kind of like a stupid gimmick for no reason.
Seriously. You know what I would have found interesting now you mentioned it here? We know that Paul Heyman had association with The Shield.
Yeah.
We know that he's the manager of CM Punk and the manager of Brock Lesnar. Now, there would have been something. Having those, all five of them come together as a unit, that would have been unstoppable.
Exactly.
And that would have been a serious storyline that you can carry for months and months and months. You can get a tag team champion there, the world champion there, whatever stupid title they got, TV title. No, they don't got a TV title, U.S. title.
I hope they go in that direction, but I have no faith in the writers to even come up with something like that.
No.
But it would make sense. But you never know. They could fool us, and it could, after WrestleMania, it could be, you know, The Shield could cost Taker is finally his streak. Maybe Punk will win. Maybe. Maybe they'll cost Triple H's career, and then it'll be Shield, Punk, and Lesnar. And that would be actually awesome. That would be legit. You know?
It would be. That would be amazing. I would watch that every day.
I always used to really like the Royal Rumbles. Do they still do those?
They do. They're okay. They're okay. I mean, they have sometimes some weak cards just before it.
Yeah.
But it's still an okay match.
This year's was actually good because they had a Rock versus CM Punk match.
Yes, they did.
For the world title.
Right.
And The Rock retained. Actually, he won the world title that night, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. I think that was his first match.
Yeah.
And that's when The Shield interfered or something like that. So that was a good match.
And just on a side note before we finish, I really, really like the fact that they finally did away with that stupid spinner belt, because I thought that thing was ludicrous and the most ugliest piece of crap I've ever seen. So I'm glad they finally went back to a more traditional-looking belt.
Hey, maybe that's why they brought back The Rock, just to bring back the tradition.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Oh, WrestleMania 29. Well, I'll be watching, but
yeah, me too, unfortunately.
Yeah, but not with bated breath or anything. Yeah. Just like,
Okay, I want to thank our special guest, Chris Bratt, for coming in to talk to us about WrestleMania. Let's hope that it surpasses all of our expectations.
Yes, let's hope, if you smell what the croc is cooking.
He's a man.
This report is courtesy of the Canadian Press. It's on the TSN.ca website. The NHL trade deadline passed with Roberto Luongo still in Vancouver, and the Canucks goaltender gave a refreshingly blunt answer for a possible reason why. "My contract sucks," Luongo said, with uncommon candor at a post-deadline news conference Wednesday. "It's a big factor in trading me and why I'm probably still here. I'd scrap the contract if I could right now." Luongo, who has 10 years remaining on a 12-year contract worth $64 million U.S., asked for a trade in the offseason after being supplanted by Corey Snyder as number one netminder in Vancouver. Roberto Luongo is our man of the week. Welcome back to the RPM Roundtable Podcast. I'm Paul here with Robin and Mike. We're going to talk about the Toronto Blue Jays' first two games. I know you guys were at the home opener. Let's just open it right up. What do you guys want to talk about as far as the Jays' 0-2 start?
What's there not to talk about, really? From my observations at the home opener, there's one guy I blamed for the pretty much entire loss. I know you can't hang the whole thing on him, but you know, almost pretty much can, and that's J.P.R. and Sebia. Already probably an average defensive catcher at best. On a normal pitcher, let alone Dickey, who throws the knuckleball, who Aaron Sebia struggled with, three pass balls. There could have been way more if they actually had runners on. But and he was the reason that the Indians actually were able to score two runs. I believe one of them definitely came off a pass ball, and it was not the earned run wasn't charged to Dickey. But J.P., I don't know what the heck he's doing, but he's got to move his body over. Every time I saw, there was actually somebody put up a GIF of the nine times that he had struggled catching the knuckleball. And two of them stuck out at me quite a bit, and they were ones where the ball kind of bounced to his side, and instead of moving his body and blocking it with his body, he just stuck his hand out, tried to block the ball in the dirt, and it went right behind him. So I mean he just frustrates me. He can't catch Dickey the next game. I know already he's not going to, Blanco is, but he's gotta work on it. And I think the people that saw him in the spring that thought he can catch the knuckleball now, well, no, he can't. Clearly he cannot catch the knuckleball. So he's gotta work on that, or they're gonna be in trouble every time Dickey rolls out there every 5 days.
Now, just one thing before we move on, and you talk about him about Aaron Sebia not being able to catch the knuckleball, and they're now working this out in meaningful baseball games. One of the storylines with Romero was that they weren't going to be able to work out his mechanics in meaningful baseball games. Is there any similarities there to what's going on?
I think so, yeah, and I think if this is a go-for-it year, work on this stuff in practice. Don't put him out there in a game. I understand it's opening day. You got to run your starter out there. For God's sakes, like if Dickey was pitching second in the rotation and he went out there last night as opposed to opening night, I guarantee you Blanco would have been catching him. But I mean, I don't know. I also think that when they both went to the World Baseball Classic, I think that had a negative effect because he didn't stay back. He's got three new pitchers in the rotation to work with. And he's at the World Baseball Classic as opposed to spring training, working with those pitchers. And Dickey should have stayed back, too. I know they probably had a ton of time to work on the knuckleball there. I don't know myself. Maybe I can't make these kind of comments, but that's just what I think, personally. So,
well, I'm going to have to disagree with that. I think that JP's struggles to catch the knuckleball overshadowed the fact that Dickey was bad on opening night. Yeah, he gave up four runs. Three of them were earned and had nothing to do with JP missing the ball. He also walked four batters. Again, nothing to do with JP. And people aren't blaming him at all because of what happened. And I don't think that that's fair at all.
Well, just wait a second, because here's my opinion, because I agree with that. I know Dickie threw a bunch of walks. And just to me, I think the whole thing was still... It still is the JP problem, because I thought maybe Dickie wasn't comfortable pitching to him, hence why he was struggling. Maybe he was reluctant to throw more knuckleballs to JP. Maybe that's why he gave up that big meatball to right field there by Cabrera.
It was on a knuckleball.
Was it?
It was. So, like, I don't buy that. I don't think it's fair. I think people, again, with the whole Romero in spring and struggling, people think, oh, it's the same thing. People already have in their mind that JP's going to struggle. And so it's just, confirmation bias. Yeah, he wasn't good. He wasn't good at all. But I don't think that Dickie should get off the hook, because I don't know if he walked four in any start all of last year. And I don't know. I wasn't impressed.
Okay, well, here's the other thing, too. And here's the other culprits in this matter, and probably attributed to the loss last night, and that's Adam Lind and Colby Rasmus, who are now a combined one for 12. Actually, sorry, Adam Lind, JP, and Colby Rasmus are all combined one for 21 in the first two games. With eight strikeouts between the three of them, I believe. And I know when we were at the game at the home opener in that bases loaded, no out situation, and I thought to myself, how are these two guys going to screw it up? And that was Aaron Sebia and Lind. And I said to Robin, Lind's going to hit into a double play. They'll score one run, and Aaron Sebia will strike out. And that's exactly what happened. And I don't know what the heck's going on with them. I mean, did nobody else see this coming? I know it's two games into the season, but I kind of foresaw the fact that Lynn's going to suck. I mean, he hasn't been good for 2 years now. He had that great year where he won the Silver Slugger. Good for him. He can't hit lefties still. I don't know. It's that middle of the order needs Brett Laurie back pretty bad. Don't know whether he's going to be a solution or not, but it's just they need to juggle it up or something. You can't have those three guys hitting right run after each other.
I'm glad you mentioned the part about Rasmus striking out, because this always drives me up the wall. Why do people get so upset with strikeouts? It looks bad, sure, but it's the same result as a ground out, a fly out, whatever. Yeah, Colby hasn't put good swings on the ball. Fair enough. He made a very nice play in last night's game. And just about the batting averages, Jose Reyes has a lower batting average than JP. So it's not like anyone on this team is hitting. As you said, it's two games into the season, and I think people need to relax. I don't want to say, I don't like the cop-out of saying we ran into a hot pitcher, because I don't think Masterson was particularly good. They let him off the ropes a couple of times. Jimenez was good, but if they struggle tonight again against Brett Myers, then there may be a real issue, because he's really bad. And but I think people need to just relax a little bit about the so-called struggles. It's two games. These guys have had eight at-bats, and I don't know. I don't think it's a big issue.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that, too. I saw the front page of the Star yesterday, and it was some kid down in the dumps, a Blue Jays fan, and the headline was failed launch, I believe it was. And I just thought that was so ludicrous that they would, like, this, I don't know what the hell kind of crap this media here in Toronto is trying to feed these people, because it's the first game. They lost the first game. It's like the Fairweather fans or something think that the home opener is the World Series or something. They can't get it around their heads that there's another 161, now 160 games. So what? They lost the first two. They still have a team that's, you know, needs time to gel. They probably all didn't play that much spring together. I know that there was a ton of AAA guys playing and it's just going to take time. This, you know, these guys are going to start coming around. There's too many good bats in the lineup to not hit, get any hits, and put up runs.
No, well, I mean,
sorry, Paul, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason why they might go out tonight and put 10 runs on the board. You never know.
No, that's it. And just you were saying about headlines, the one that jumped out at me, we saw it on the Sun on the way down to the game, World Series or bust. Like, where do you come up with this crap? Anyway, I don't think it's a good idea. And just about last night's game, obviously Bautista hit the nice home run, but as I was saying earlier, I think he needs to relax. First of all, with the showing up the umps, which he did in the first game, slamming the bat down and going down to first before the ump even called it. I think he's going to, you know, shrink his own strike zone. And then again last night with the bat flip and the whatever he's doing with his shoulders, this beast mode stuff, when he hits a home run, I wouldn't be surprised if he gets one at the shoulders tonight from Myers.
What did he go last night? Like 1-for-4 or 2?
Yeah. Yeah. 1-for-5.
Yeah.
So I think he needs to relax a little bit.
I mean, I don't mind the 1-for-5 as much as I like the fact that he actually hit a home run in the clutch for once. And then the other thing I wanted to add was the fact that I wonder how much impact that first loss had, because I know last night the attendance, I think, was less than half. I think it was about 22,000 as opposed to the 49,000 that was there on opening night. So I thought it was funny. Maybe that first loss of the season chased all the fair weather fans away, or the half baseball fans that come out and wear "I love BJ's" t-shirts. I don't.
Yeah, those are the best.
I don't know, but yeah.
Well, and Robin was saying, we were talking before the show, that they'll get a good crowd for the Boston games on the weekend.
I think so too, but it's kind of disappointing. I think Toronto can do a little better than that, given how much money the team spent on this team that's out on the field. And yeah.
Well, I think last night it came down to two plays, right? That was a horrible play by Asturias on that ground ball. It was brilliant to take the ball to third and tag it, but you've got to know who your runner is in that situation. It was Carlos Santana, the Cleveland catcher. He had all kinds of time to set his feet. And then that Santos pitch, when he gave up the home run to
Mark Reynolds.
Yeah. JP was tapping the ground. He wanted that ball in the dirt. And people say, oh, yeah, you just have to tip your hat to Reynolds there. No. You've got to locate the ball somewhere in the vicinity, you know, in either the zone or the part of the plate that he wanted it, instead of missing by 15 feet. Like,
yeah, and he threw it probably the only place Mark Reynolds can actually hit a ball. So
yeah. Yeah, well, that's it. And people say, oh, yeah, look, he hit it 400 and whatever feet. Well, that's what he does, right? He strikes out, he walks, or he hits the ball a mile. So anyway, those two plays were basically the difference in the ball game.
Absolutely. You can't hang that one on JP, at least. Even though I'd like to, somehow.
Ladies and gentlemen, cover your ears, hide your women and kids. It's time for Robin's Rant, and I mean rant.
So, as previously mentioned, the Rangers traded Marian Gaborik to the Columbus Blue Jackets, essentially for depth or prospects, and I think that's a horrible trade. Here's a guy who has 666 points in 757 games played. He's a seven-time 30-goal scorer and is under contract for next year. And people say, oh, well, he's struggling and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, because he's been on the fourth line. You don't take a guy as talented as that, put him on the fourth line, and then say, oh, look, he's not producing. And I don't understand the Rangers basically ending this feud by being on John Tortorella's team. They are fighting for the last playoff spot. I think they're in seventh now. But, like, how is this a good idea? you can't bump up a guy from the fourth line or the third line to fill Gabrick's role and say, oh, look, go score 30 goals and Gabrick's going to be a checker. I mean, that's totally ridiculous. You want to send a message to your star player? Okay, take him off the first power play unit and reduce his ice time a bit. But say, oh, yeah, look, Gabrick only has 9 goals and you cut his ice time and he's playing in the bottom 6? Ridiculous. And who knows if Tortorella's even going to be there next year. And I think this trade is going to come back and bite the Rangers in the ass.
Oh, you done did it now. Chaos, you should have put this one in the vault, man. They not ready. They don't know what's coming, man.
Thank you for listening to the RPM Roundtable Podcast.
Your boy's a bad man. Them invading the streets. Make them clap a rapper's skirt. They be dropping the heat. Shock the world. Now I'm standing alone. I flip fools like them clamshell cellular phones. You can't help but nod your head to the track. Fuck the watered down rap, we be taking it back. Give it to me straight.